Bye-bye.
All right, yeah, always glad to hear about that. And like I said, you know, this, you know, we maybe we would have even won the damn war if all the right wingers that say they supported it actually went out and fought it. Just cowards, all of them. They say, well, why aren't you in service? Well, first of all, because I don't support this war. I don't support the thing in Iraq. And you know, which sane person did, as far as I know? Nobody's sane. Nobody who had more than 3 active brain cells or who wasn't paralyzed by fear truly supported the war in Iraq. It was completely nuts. It was completely nuts, completely without reason. And we shouldn't have to explain ourselves above and beyond the idea that there was no reason to go to war. There was no threat. Well, we're coming to, we got a couple of minutes for the end here, so let me just say thank you to my callers today, Sue and Sarge, for helping me out. I want to say thank you, of course, definitely, to Agnes for producing the show. Agnes is a wonderful, wonderful person, and she called me up at like 10:30 and said, can you do the show? Because I'm panicking over here. Ah! So I said, I'll do it for $20. So she's sending me $20. No. But I want to thank Agnes for producing the show. And, of course, I want to thank Bob Kincaid for helping to start the Head On Network, and Ben Birch of the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, which is where you'll hear my archives, and the show will be up. I think it'll be in Bill O'Brien's spot, probably, because automatically with the computers, right? But on my blog, cupofjoe.blogspot.com, I will get the podcast up there for anybody who wants to listen to it. And I just want to thank everybody involved, Zach and all the other people over at the Head On Network, doing all that. Yeah, Agnes does curse like a junior sailor. Absolutely, she does. but it's been good filling in for Dr. Bill O'Brien, who should, I hope, be back on his show tomorrow. But he's a busy person. You know, like all of us here at the Head On Network, we have other things going on because this is not our primary occupation, which is kind of a shame. If somebody out there can sponsor us or sponsor my show or sponsor the Head On Network in particular, don't be afraid to do so. In the meantime, let me just say goodbye on behalf of myself. We're getting ready for the news at 1 o'clock. Man, the show went fast today, didn't it? It's always nice when it does that. So give me an email if you want, joe@cupjoe.com, and let me know what you think of the show. Let me think of what you think of the thing. And my blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And I hear the music playing, so I'm just going to let everybody go. I should be back on Friday, maybe on Thursday if Bill O'Brien can't make it. Until then, get back to work.
This is the Quality News Network. A call this morning for the removal of Dennis Hastert as Speaker of the House. The conservative Washington Times says he didn't do enough with regards to the Mark Foley scandal. Hastert denies allegations by some members of Congress that he knew or should have known about the salacious nature of Foley's emails to congressional pages before they became public on Friday, causing Foley's resignation. The FBI and the state of Florida are now investigating the matter to see whether any federal or state laws were broken by Foley. The House Ethics Committee is also investigating. In Florida, Foley's name remains on the ballot, but any votes he's received will automatically go to the man the state Republican Party has now named to replace him, State Representative Joe Nagrin. A 7-year-old girl overnight became the 5th child to die from yesterday's shootings in a Pennsylvania Amish schoolhouse. 6 others, all girls between the ages of 6 and 13, remain in critical condition at local hospitals. The gunman targeted only female students, ordering all adults and boys out of the schoolhouse before shooting each of the 11 girls in the head, then taking his own life. Authorities say he was a 32-year-old local truck driver, a father of 3, and who, according to suicide notes, was motivated by a 20-year-old grudge not related to the Amish community. Iraqi lawmakers have endorsed Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's new plan for stemming the sectarian violence, though both Shiite and Sunni leaders admit they still have a lot of details to work out. The plan calls for local committees representing all groups to be formed in each of Baghdad's districts and a central committee made up of all parties which will coordinate with the armed forces. North Korea says it plans to conduct a nuclear test to enhance its self-defense capabilities, a reaction, it says, to U.S. threats of a nuclear war and sanctions against Pyongyang. 600 soldiers from Alaska who have been training in Missouri's heat all summer are about to be deployed to Iraq, the largest deployment of National Guard troops in Alaskan state history. The troops represent 81 different communities and more than a half a dozen cultures. In eastern Afghanistan today, 2 more American soldiers have been killed, 3 wounded in gun battles there. And in Iraq, 4 American soldiers have been killed in and around the capital city in the past 24 hours. In an informal vote, South Korea's Ban Ki-moon has received the unanimous support of the UN Security Council in his bid to succeed Kofi Annan as Secretary General. 20 Nigerian oil makers who have been employed by Shell contractor, have been kidnapped after rebels attacked oil supply boats and killed five soldiers who were accompanying an oil convoy. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll have science and business news coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Another two Americans have been named recipients of a Nobel Prize, this one for physics, for their work on the origins of the universe. John Mather and George Smoot will share the $1.4 million prize. Men's Fitness Magazine has named Pennsylvania's Dickinson College as the fittest in the nation in terms of its commitment to student health. Last year's winner was Brigham Young University. Luxury handbag maker Coach is suing a Target for allegedly selling counterfeit Coach bags in at least one of its Florida outlets. The suit was filed in Manhattan. Pier 1 has announced it will dump shareholder dividends this year, this after a second quarter loss of $73 million. That's Pier 1's fifth consecutive quarterly loss. Their CEO resigned over the weekend. Census Bureau reports that in every state except Alaska, American homeowners spent more of their incomes on housing in 2005 than they did 5 years ago. Americans now spending 21% of their gross income on housing. 5 years ago, it was 19. A new survey shows that the U.S. labor market continues to weaken, with the number of planned job cuts for September exceeding 100,000, and that's up 54% from the month of August. Gold is down over $15 an ounce at this hour, trading at $587.90. Silver is at $11.17. And light sweet crude now below $60 a barrel. It's down $1.18, trading at $59.85. On Wall Street, the markets are mixed. The Dow is up 10 at 11,680, but both the NASDAQ and the S&P are down. The NASDAQ is down 7. The S&P 500 is down 2. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
Welcome to Dialogue, to Conversation, to a place where the experts wear working clothes, where history matters, where the past makes our present and we make the future. Welcome to the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show. Dr. Bill O'Brien.
Good afternoon. This is Bill O'Brien. It is 7 minutes after the hour in the East. It is 7 minutes after noon on this, a Tuesday. Today is the third day of October, and we welcome you to today's program. We really do thank you for tuning in. We always do. And take your commitment to the time that you devote to this program very, very seriously. And again, just a quick comment. Perhaps there are listeners out there that haven't heard this before, and those of you who have, I apologize. But internet radio is quite a bit different than land radio in a lot of reasons, and I know you've heard people talk about this before, but people don't just wander in here. They have to dial a specific address in order to tune into this program. So basically, it's very, very important that you feel welcome when you join us, because you made an effort to get here. And I want you to know that we all here at Head On Radio, we all appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I hope and commit to the idea that we'll do everything we can to make your commitment of time to this program, however long it may be, worthwhile commitment for you. And whether you stay with us, we invite you to stay with us through the whole program. In fact, we hope that you'll stay with the Head On Radio Network through the day, because we believe that you're going to get the best and most insightful comment and commentary here. You won't get it anywhere else. And so we appreciate that. We welcome you, and we'll do our very best to make your day a little bit better, a little bit more worthwhile, at least this investment of your time. We invite you to participate actively in our program. We have a call-in line number. It's toll-free. It's 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. Issues of the day, obviously, the big news is the Mark Foley situation. It is very, very it's unbelievable. Very honestly, the impact that this situation is having on politics throughout the country. It has legs, as they say. It's getting all sorts of attention and feedback. Many of you, I know that I'm saying things that many of you already know, and so I apologize for that, but I think it kind of establishes a base from which we can operate. There's absolutely no question. The Washington Times today asks for Dennis Hastert's resignation as Speaker of the House because of his unwillingness, obvious unwillingness, since the evidence is pretty firm now that knowledge of Foley's behaviors or patterns of behavior, if you will, were known on the Hill for quite a bit of time. Mr. Hastert took the approach, which is to apparently to issue a warning to Foley about the fact that he was getting too close to, through his emails, was getting too close to some of the pages. But basically, I think his approach was that hopefully if you look the other way, it'll go away. And it's a management style a lot of people adopt, and it's understandable, very honestly. If I were, and I thought of this morning when I heard about the Washington Times editorial, I put myself in Dennis Hastert's position and say, if you're going to be Speaker, if you're going to be the one that that manages the operation, you have to be willing to deal with these kinds of things. But obviously nobody enjoys it and nobody wants to, and everybody hopes that what people are posing as a possibility will go away. But in fact, this one didn't, and he's bearing the brunt of it now, as are all Republicans, because at first there was an effort at damage control. But very, very honestly, this one coming as it does so close to the elections, of course, that's in the mind of some partisans, conservative partisans, Republican partisans. The argument is that, is it an accident that these emails and this whole issue surfaced now 5 weeks before the election? 5 weeks from today is the election. But in reality, this thing has been floating around for a long time, and I think the Washington Times and other people are taking the most, what seems to me the high road here is let's get rid of the management people. I was struck, and this is a something that has bothered me for a long time, with the way that the Roman Catholic Church here in the United States tried to do the same thing with the abuse scandals that were happening, were rocking the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church here in the United States over the years, and other places as well, I know. The most unforgivable aspect of this is that the church made conscious efforts to try to hide this, to move the offending priests around. I'm thinking specifically of Cardinal Law in Boston, who did that. And one of the things that bothers me very, very deeply about this is that it obviously speaks to the old idea that the priority here is to protect the institution and the people served by the institution or the people within it are secondary. I think that was the message that the Catholic Church sent loud and clear during that scandal, and it's paying the price. It's paying the price in terms of reduced contributions. I am struck by the fact, I'll talk about this later, but my brother just returned from a week of volunteer work in the Gulf, and one of the comments that he made to me when he returned is that most of the people that he was dealing with down there are Catholics. He was in an area in Mississippi about 50 miles east of New Orleans, around a place called Bay St. Louis, which is in the Gulf area, fairly close to Biloxi, Mississippi, and Gulfport in those areas. And he said the population is heavily Catholic, and the Catholic Church was nowhere to be found. It was nowhere there. And what we were talking about was that the millions, the tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars that Roman Catholics throughout this country have poured into Catholic charities and other things over the years, and all of that money meant to pay litigation suits. And here comes Katrina and the challenge in the Gulf, and the Catholic Church is not there, at least not visibly there now. I mean, we're a year out, I know. It struck me that you got to deal with these issues, and you got to deal with the people. And obviously the people are the priority. They are in the Katrina situation. They are in the Roman Catholic situation. And they are in the situation that's going on Congress. And in spite of the fact that this Mark Foley thing has legs, clearly it's a major, major issue. Nobody denies that. And it's getting a lot of attention, and it's going to hurt the Republican Party. But this is not a Republican-Democratic thing. It seems to me this goes deeper. What we're dealing with here is one more example for the Republicans, unfortunately, in a very unfortunate place, given the fact that the elections are coming. But Foley could as easily have been a Democrat. I mean, the fact what he did, in terms of these emails has nothing to do with whether he's a Democrat or whether he's a Republican or not. But it's happening in the context of a strident, partisan, ideological, political world that we live in. And so therefore people are reacting accordingly. In fact, I saw one of the people reacting last night actually smiling and made the comment and said, "I can't help it. I absolutely delight in watching hypocrites fall." And, of course, what that speaks to, I think, is a significant issue here. What that speaks to is the fact that the Republican Party, created this situation by making such a big deal out of family values and trying to suggest that Democrats didn't have family values and didn't support good and right and morality and all these other things, and the chickens are coming home to roost, so to speak, and some people get delight out of that. But the fact of the matter is it goes way beyond the realm of politics. It goes to the basic essence of what our society is about, and it's frightening because basically it suggests that recognizing the value and celebrating humanity and recognizing the validity of people as human beings and giving them the respect that they are due for that reason is hurting in this society, and it's hurting. It doesn't matter whether it's Democrats, Republicans, or whatever. It's hurting, and I think this is an indication of that. We've got some major, major work to do, and it's not one party or the other, I would suggest. It's a challenge that is going to take all of us to address. We're at 16 minutes after the hour. We're going to pause and take our first break, and when we come back, we have Ray on the line, and we'll join him after these messages. Please stay tuned.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
What's Head On with Bob Kincaid?
This is Head On with Bob Kincaid.
The only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of the bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie. Does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only at headonradionetwork.com and radiopower.org.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
Now, back to the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show on the Head On Radio Network.
We are at 20 minutes after the hour. This is Bill O'Brien, and you have joined us on the Head On Radio Network. Our call-in line number, which is toll-free, 877-443-2366. We welcome you to today's program if you're just joining us. Those of you who have been with us, thank you for staying with us. Let's go to our phones. We have a caller on the line. We have Ray. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Bill.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. So?
Doing very well. Thank you.
I was just calling. I'm in the chat room. And also, there's a lot of echo here.
Quite a bit. I'm having trouble picking you up, Ray.
I don't know. Let me call you back.
Okay. Not a problem. Thanks, Ray.
Sure.
Appreciate that. Obviously waiting for Ray's call back, but I want to alert you that I'd like to, pending obviously your calls, I'd like to return to a topic that we touched on a little bit on last time we were together, which goes all the way back to FDR. And again, the reason is very, very obvious that the reason that I'm interested in this is because I think it's important that we look at the overall game plan of what we're dealing with here in terms of not only international or foreign policy, but also domestic as well. We focus so much on Iraq. It's kind of interesting because I think it's very important that we do focus on Iraq. And obviously, right now, for a long time, the administration wanted to focus on Iraq, and then they didn't want to focus on Iraq. Then they wanted to focus on the war on terror, but they wanted us to assume that the war in Iraq was part of the administration's war on terror. And then, of course, by the situation that we created, it became a focus of the war on terror, did Iraq. And now we're in a situation where the situation is going so bad with the intelligence estimate, the national intelligence estimate last week, and then, of course, over this weekend and the pending the release of Bob Woodward's book showing basically an administration in disarray over Iraq. So the emphasis continues to be on Iraq, but please be aware that we live, we citizens in this country, we live in this society, and there's a much bigger game going on than just the war in Iraq, although it's obviously getting all the focus and all the attention and is drawing all the money, very honestly. Programs, domestic programs, are being cut incredibly. Grants are not being refunded. And that's something that I want to get into as well, is this whole issue of grants and funding and who gets funded and who doesn't. And there's a lot going on here, it seems to me, and it's all somewhat connected, and it's you know, you deal with it in pieces, and it's very, very important to constantly reconnect the pieces to the bigger picture, to the puzzle as a whole, and that's what we'd like to do. Part of that, going into the domestic issue, is to look at FDR's 1944 address, and the reason that I chose to do that, and I want to get back to it. We talked a little bit about it last time, but I want to get back into it in more detail. There's no question that what FDR is saying in 1944 defines a relationship between government and citizens that is under attack right now. There is absolutely no question that the priority agenda of the administration, and again, I don't care which issue you're talking about, privatizing Social Security, the shift in defined benefit programs as part of our pension program, the shift into an IRA type of retirement program, which the president and the administration says that is part of the society that is trying to promote, which it calls, for lack of a better term, I think it's a good term, an ownership society. The assumption is you own your own retirement plan, and the argument is you can take it from job to job. The same thing with health care. There's a move to obviously to privatize health care with the emphasis on HMOs and all the rest of it. So what we're talking about here is a gargantuan, multifaceted movement towards privatization of as many sectors of society as possible, all driven by the ideological foundation of conservatives in this country, which is that government needs to be reduced, that it's necessary to starve the beast, it's necessary to turn to the private sector for the delivery of services that are much more efficient, much more effective, much cheaper. We can save money doing this. We're talking about programs to privatize prisons. We're talking about programs to privatize health care. We're talking about programs to privatize retirement, which, you know, and many states have bought into this, and many states, for their public service workers, state employees, are being shifted from defined benefit pension or retirement programs into something which is much more in tune with the ownership society. The bulk of the matter is that this process began in the 80s with the election of Ronald Reagan and the passage of the so-called Budget Reform Act. I believe it was passed in 1986 at the height of the Reagan administration. And this began the process of a gradual transition toward what the Bush administration is referring to as the ownership society. It's very, very important that we look at that. And the only way to look at it and understand it is to understand, in part at least, the alternative. There's no question that this administration, throughout the first Bush term and the second, is clearly committed to a 180-degree turnaround in terms of the relationship between citizens and their government that was established as part of FDR's New Deal program. That's what's under attack here. And we're looking at various facets, and again, very, very easy to become dissuaded, to become confused between the forest and the trees. We tend to lose the view of the forest because we begin to focus so much on the trees. That happens in the Iraq situation as well, and the war on terror and all the rest of it. We tend, for purposes of simplicity, we tend to ignore or to jettison considerations and factors that play a major role in understanding the overall game plan or the overall picture here. So what I seek to do, and I'm doing it with FDR's 44 National Address to the Nation, the State of the Union message, because it seems to me in that one speech, FDR takes as World War II is coming toward a conclusion. This is in January of 44. It's not over yet. In fact, part of Roosevelt's address is to warn people that not to become too optimistic that we're winning the war and to give up on what the war is about. What he's talking about is the post-war world. What we're dealing with right now is an administration that obviously didn't consider a post-Iraq world and didn't even consider anything, you know, didn't consider Iraq beyond the toppling of the administration, beyond the regime change itself. And so basically we're paying the price for that. Roosevelt was talking about a game plan for American society, the relation between government and its citizens after World War II. And he referred to it in this address as a second Bill of Rights. In other places, he refers to it as an economic Bill of Rights or a social Bill of Rights or whatever. It includes elements of both. But and it's, I'm not saying that all of this didn't happen. I mean, the GI Bill was part of this, opening up education, higher education to the returning troops, to the masses, the beginning of big education, as we talk about in this society today, with funding programs and financial aid programs and all the rest of it, and higher education institutions that adopt open enrollment systems and all the rest of it is part of this. But there's no question that the attack on this program is multifaceted. There is absolutely no question. This is something we'll deal with very, very soon. I'm putting together some material now. There's no question that No Child Left Behind is the education facet of the commitment to universal education that FDR talked about in this State of the Union message in 1944. That ultimately No Child Left Behind, is controversial. It's getting a lot of attention, but it also falls into the same pattern that we saw in the efforts to privatize Social Security and many of these other things. So it's very, very important that we get a handle on it. It's very important that we not overlook it. I don't mean that we need to take Iraq off the front pages. That's exactly what the administration wants us to do right now. So we got to talk about it, but we continually have to take a step or two back and look at the big picture, because as long as we understand what the big picture is, we can deal with the elements of efforts to bring it about. And that's really what I think it's about. And again, what we have to do is make some decisions as individuals, as citizens in this society, about where we want to go and what we want to do. And in order to do that, we need to understand that there are agendas, that many of the people who are trying to sell us a way to go have an agenda. We need to understand what their agenda is. It doesn't mean we need to take them on. That's your call. But we at least need to get the information out there so that people's decisions are intelligent ones and are informed ones. And that's what we're about. We're at 30 minutes after the hour, 31 minutes after the hour. We're going to pause for our first bottom of the hour break in our first hour. This is the Head On Radio Network. I am Bill O'Brien, and we do thank you for tuning in to us today. We'll pause for a message or two, and we'll be right back.
Universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment?
This is a top to, you know, we
use... Here's my picnic and Colin...
Reasoned opinion...
...best with... ...and Colin Benninger's back on a production of The Rocky Horror Show, where he played the narrator. And, boy, did I find out that the image was completely false. He's just a very, very smart guy, very, very well-thought guy, and a biting, biting, biting sense of humor. And don't tell him he can't smoke somewhere. That's all I'll tell you. But anyway, back to the battle between Johnny Howard and Al Gore. Gore automatically slams Howard back on his, you know, other Kyoto idea, you know, and it says here, again from the City Morning Herald, greenhouse alternative will fail, says Gore. John Howard's promotion of a new global climate change pact that would protect Australia's economic interests is unrealistic and likely to fail, the former U.S. President Al Gore says. If Australia this in Australia this month to train climate change presenters, Mr. Gore yesterday urged the Prime Minister to join negotiations taking place in Nairobi on a tougher second phase of the Kyoto Protocol on climate change. If Australia's proposal is not part of the rest of the world community, then it has no meaningful force. This is a key point. If the proposition is that Australia will design a completely different greenhouse gas emissions trading system, and then wait until the rest of the world abandons the main one and adopts the Australian one, it's probably not realistic. Joining the process now in Nairobi and seeking some modifications to Kyoto, that is entirely proper. Mr. Howard said on Monday he would form a task force to consider a global carbon trading scheme to help tackle climate change. His own greenhouse office has researched and made recommendations on emissions trading in papers dating as far back as 1999, but they have been ignored by the government. Yesterday, the Prime Minister met with business leaders, including Don Argus from BHP, Oscar Groeneveld from Rio Tinto Aluminum, and Colin Beckett from Chevron Oil to discuss emissions trading. It appears scientists, energy experts, environmentalists will not be consulted, although they have been long-term supporters of such a global scheme. Sounds like we're gonna load up the process again. This is not open debate. This is not discussion. This is just railroading what they want. I mean, it's just... And, you know, however, Mr. Howard has warned he would not support any scheme that would damage Australia's fossil fuel sector or energy intensive industries such as aluminum, steel, and cement. Nor would he take part in any global agreement that did not set tough emission reduction targets for developing nations such as China and India. Hello! Again, Howard, you're a jackass. These countries didn't create the problem. It's the nations that created the problem that need to lead the way. Or else, what weight does any of this have? And Mr. Gore agreed it was vital that future heavy polluters such as China and India dramatically cut their emissions, but since the end of World War II, every global treaty has had the same basis. The wealthy countries go first, and then those nations, if their per capita incomes are so much lower than those of the developed world, they come along in a second phase. Which makes sense. On Tuesday, the French Prime Minister, Dominique de Villepin, threatened to tax imports from countries that had not committed themselves to the second phase of the Kyoto Protocol. Europe has to use all its weight to stand up to this sort of environmental dumping, he said. And I think that this is good stuff. This is all very, very, very good stuff. And I really, I hope that, you know, if Al goes back to the U.S. with, you know, a compilation of video from the Sunrise program showing what has actually happened just due to a morning news show taking a nonpartisan, factual look at global warming, greenhouse gas emissions, you know, renewable sources of energy. It has given strength to the grassroots community that was already fighting for all these things. You know, we've seen polls here in Australia that Australians would pay more for basic services and even higher taxes to turn this mess around. So the people want it. And, you know, this seems to be the mess of modern government, that our representatives don't seem to give a rat's patoot about what the people actually think or want. And, you know, so much for, you know, representative government. But, you know, I really think that the tide is finally beginning to turn. Public pressure on all sides is bringing this right to the forefront, where it needs to be. You're right there, Agnes. The reason that they don't do it is it would cut into their, you know, into their dividends, into their support money. It dumbfounds me, you know, this is a perfect example of, you know, Howard can never be wrong. You know, he won't sign on to Kyoto, but we'll write another one and then everybody can join us. Makes no sense. Makes no sense. You know, I think, you know, if we can continue to keep this in the forefront, and I think just Mother Nature is going to keep it in the forefront regardless, because, I mean, the weather just continues to get kind of more and more mad. You know, the drought here is just never ending. And I've heard, interestingly enough, that there's some discussion between the states here to actually buy out the largest cotton plantation in Australia and shut it down so that they can redistribute the water to more viable crops. And I think that is a very, very smart move, because, you know, a desert island nation, continent, growing rice and cotton. Why? You know? Asia's only bloody, you know, a boat ride away. There's plenty of rice. You know, a lot of hard choices to be made. And, you know, these changes are going to hurt. It's not going to be easy. But it doesn't mean that it's not possible, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be trying as hard as we can to reduce the impact of, you know, the way we run our societies. And our News Ninja sent me a story yesterday, and I might talk about this a little bit more tomorrow, but one of the green sites posted a story that possibly the greatest invention for climate change and global warming could be the condom. Think about that. Because every one of us individually doesn't necessarily do all that much damage. In fact, on a person-to-person level, you know, it's not much difference. However, it's the fact that we are so overpopulated on this planet that collectively we're burning the place up. You know, so, you know, I get really frustrated with the Australian government here, because they're constantly on these campaigns trying to get women to have babies. And I know that that's on the guise that, you know, to keep the economy going, we're going to need workers and we're going to need consumers. But we have to rethink how we run our economies, because this kind of runaway industrialized capitalism is not sustainable. I mean, this is what has been proven. You know, the only way a lot of these companies can stay in business is by doing damage. And I'm sorry, I'm at the point now, if you can't do it sustainably, you're not viable. You shouldn't be in business. Period. End of story. All right, folks, we're going to take our last break before we finish up this bit of the Green Hour, which is foxed up. I really just am hoping that the wave will continue to rush forward on bringing all of this as the number one issue. And I think Kofi Annan is right in telling, you know, developed leaders that, hey, you know, you got to get on this like you go drooling for war, folks. It needs the same kind of concentration. Because, well, when America puts its mind to something, it can sure push something through, even if it's wrong. How about doing it for something that's right? So anyway, you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to take our last break for the afternoon and close it up. So we'll see you straight after this.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. the nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark CFV.org for free loan open caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Mark Lazat, Australia's Diesel. What a guitar player. What a voice. Just, and what a nice guy. Anyway, and please look up Diesel and the Injectors, his original band. You'll love the early stuff. But we've got a caller on the line. Susan, line one. Come on. How you doing, Susan?
Hanging in there. I just have a little brief comment.
Sure.
The world is going to take care of the environment, or it's going to find out firsthand the meaning of the term Malthusian solution. And that ain't pretty. It's otherwise known, for those people who haven't read it, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong. And,
no,
and you know,
and it's with, ugly.
And it is ugly. And to have people like John Howard say, you know, it's not going to happen tomorrow. Well, you know, we know it's not going to happen tomorrow. We've been saying that for decades. But you know, actually, it's already happening, mate.
Yeah, and you know, it's not a matter of just, you know, okay, this is not going to happen tomorrow. No, but you have to start fixing it. You know, like you were talking about icebergs floating around, you know, close to Australia. Okay, those icebergs calved off of a glacier that was created millions of years ago.
Yeah.
Geologic time is very, very slow, and it's time to start fixing it now, or the planet will fix it for you. And if you want to look at what it's like in its most extreme example, take a good look at what Venus is like.
Ooh, good point.
Yeah, that's out of control greenhouse gas.
Absolutely. And you know, I just still am blown away that there are still people out there and people in power that seem to be able to keep the reality at an arm's distance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know quantum mechanics says that we create our own reality, but, I mean, seriously, that reality is crashing up against everybody else's reality. It's, you know, there needs to be some effect there, because it's just, they're way too slow on the uptake. And Jimmy Carter, I'm sorry, was so right in the 70s, and if we had taken... And if we had taken his lead back then, we would be in a completely different situation than we are in today.
That's why he is one of my most revered presidents, because he was not only a truly honorable, he's not only a truly honorable man, but also he was a very, very, he's a very, very visionary one. I keep trying to say was. He's still here.
Well, yeah, and the other thing too is I always like to put this comparison up. When you compare ex presidents and what they do after they get out of office, you know, Jimmy Carter has been doing the Habitat for Humanity thing for as long as I can remember,
yeah,
and building free homes for people. Clinton has Somalia that he's got his big kind of push to try and fix some things, But then you look at the Republican ex-presidents, they all go back to making money and making war.
Right. I do know for a fact that Jimmy Carter didn't go out and start pushing paper either. He went out almost to the day after he got out of office and literally picked up a hammer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Blew me away. Here's this ex-president with his security detail, because they weren't going to go away that soon. And he's out there with a stupid hammer building houses.
That's a leader, and it's amazing. It really is amazing the distortion of the man in the eyes of the general public and the media. Regardless of what you might have thought of him as president at the time, he's proved to be one, right, and second, to be pretty righteous. He's the kind of born again Christian I can handle. Because he lets it guide him towards a positive life and trying to help others and doing things for your fellow man, which I think is actually what the whole religion's supposed to be about. I don't know when, hate and destruction all kind of got put into the mix, but he put solar panels on the White House, which Ronnie Reagan ripped off first thing he got in. I think you can see who cares and who doesn't.
Yeah. He is far and away, even among, as far as I know, even among the Democrats, he is the only truly honorable president we've ever had.
I have to agree with you. And like I said, the fact that, and you said it, he got out of office and the first thing he did was, okay, I can't help the nation and people anymore as president. I can now do what I can as a private citizen, and goes out there with a hammer and starts building homes that poor people can own.
Yeah, I loved him to death when he was in office, and I love him still.
Yeah, and I grew up in a real right-wing household, so, I was fed the Kool-Aid on him for a long, long time, and it took my grand awakening for me to have a second look at him and realize how wrong I was and how blind I was to someone who really was a good man and still is. He goes and monitors elections all over the world, he's got his heart and his mind in the right place.
We're at the top of the hour, but I just wanted to bring up the Malthusian thing and Venus, because people, if we don't fix it, the planet will fix it for us, and we won't like it.
Nope, we're not going to. There are bad things on the horizon if we don't get moving quick. And Susan, thank you so much for ringing in. I really appreciate it.
All right, have a
great night. All right, folks, we're just about up on top of it, and so we got to run the credits as usual. The program was produced by the slightly drug-addled Agnes, who is still suffering double pneumonia and refuses to get the rest that she needs. Everyone email her and tell her, sleep, dear, sleep. Also, always thank you to Peter Gobble, the Gobble Computers, for keeping the bits running in the home studio and elsewhere. The Mid-Atlantic Council of Carpenters for making everything on the horn possible. Mr. Scott Barry at B1 Louder Productions in Sydney for all the music, our mods in the chat room, our news ninjas, and thank you, Gene. You've been sending me such great stories, and I didn't even get to my bus driver story. I'll try and remember that tomorrow. Stick around. I believe it's Wednesday night, so that means it's Beer Meeting Edition. Get ready. Pull up a pew. It's time for Brother Bob to go after the religion industry, and shortly after that, my best mate, Bruce Birch, will take you through the evening. So thanks for joining me again, folks. Remember, you can drop me a line at John, JON, at headonradionetwork.com. Love to hear from you. Send us your stories. tell me what you're doing in your own community to make a difference, you know, because, I mean, it seriously is, you know, that think globally, act locally thing really, really is it. That is it. So with that, this is it. Thanks for joining me, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night.
Yes, I'd love to have you join us if you remember it, Mikey.
Baby, start me up. Baby, start me up. I'll never stop. Baby, start me up. Turn me up. Baby, start me up. I'll never stop. I've been running hard, running hard. But you got my ticket for the full top. Baby, start me up. Turn me up. Baby, start me up. I'll never stop. You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
The oil, the gasoline, I ride smooth, she's a clean machine.
So let's start it up,
start it up.
You want to start it, get it all you got. I can't compete,
can't be
with the riders in reality. You can rough it up,
rough it up.
Hey, if you like it, you can slide it up. Come on, slide it up now. Grown man cry,
cry.
To make a grown man cry,
cry.
To make a grown man cry,
cry.
My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy, she's a mean machine.
This is the Quality News Network. At the Lewis Scooter Libby trial today, the judge dismissed one of the jurors because she was exposed to a media account of the trial over the weekend. The judge allowed the deliberations to continue with 11 jurors. On an unannounced stop in Pakistan, Vice President Dick Cheney warned today that Al-Qaeda is regrouping there, specifically in the remote border area near Afghanistan. He asked for Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf's assistance in fighting the militants. Afterwards, Cheney traveled to Afghanistan, but his meeting with Afghan President Hamid Karzai was canceled because of bad weather. Britain will send 1,400 extra troops to Afghanistan, according to the British Defense Secretary. The troops will be part of the NATO force, which is expecting a Taliban resurgence this spring. The Iraqi cabinet has approved a draft of the oil law today, which will now go to the parliament. Prime Minister